Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Music is an integral part of any culture. Before a music artist makes it to the large venues, they must start with the smaller stages. Some of them are cinder block buildings with no windows. Others are more wide open, holding almost 1,000 people. Meet you at the table to talk about some of these beautiful, humble beginnings. I'm Lainey.
And I'm Laura Beth.
And we are
Steel Magnolias.
The strength of steel with the grace of a magnolia. We are here to have uplifting conversations about life in the South.
And we've got plenty of room at our table.
So pull up a chair. Welcome back to the Steel Magnolias podcast. If you are new to our proverbial table, welcome. We're glad you're here. Not sure how you found us, but it was probably from a friend. So be sure to thank that friend if you enjoy this episode today. And we do hope that you will enjoy it. I'm excited to talk about this subject because we are music lovers.
Yes.
And it is summertime, and music just goes hand in hand with the season of summer. Does it
not? Totally. Totally.
So there's festivals and concert tours being announced, and road trips are being planned, hopefully.
And get your chacos ready.
Yes. It just is the soundtrack of summer.
Totally.
No matter what kind of music you like, usually music is a part of your summer in some respect. So we're so pumped to talk about this topic, and it took a lot of distilling down into what we've got today, because the original title was going to be Iconic Southern Venues.
And that opened a huge can of worms. I had to text Larbeth and say, okay, I have 35 so far on my list.
Which we typically try and stay around a top 10 kind of list.
Yeah,
for anything.
So that's obviously not going to work. So I'm like, we're going to have to break it down. Mm-hmm. Do we want to do outdoor, indoor? Nope, still too big. Do we want to do...
Yeah.
Based on capacity, yeah. Like, how are we breaking this down? Because this is a hard one.
So we do have a breakdown, but it's going to be several volumes. It's not going to be, we're not doing a series. It's not going to be like the next four consecutive episodes.
Because we may lose people
music.
That aren't music freaks like us. But
we did decide that we would start with smaller venues that are indoors. We're just calling them music clubs. Because yeah. I think
under
guys...
1,000 or 1,000-ish.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's even funny to say because a couple of them on my list are like maybe 50.
Yeah, I have a couple of 100-ish.
300.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very different feel than 1,000. But we had to break it down some kind of way.
For sure. If you are not an, like... how many people are in a room kind of person like I am. Like, I have a hard time sizing up a room.
Okay.
And see, stop right now and think about your favorite venue in your town and go look up the capacity of it.
Oh, that's a great
idea.
So you
have a frame of reference when we're talking about these places of, oh my gosh, that's half the size of my favorite venue in town or whatever.
Or maybe even your, if you know about like your church sanctuary, if you know it holds 500.
There you go.
Then, okay. Three, you know.
Okay.
Who knows what works for you, but.
Let's go. Okay. Some of these we've been to, and that's even more fun to share.
Some of them we've been to, and then I have, like, at least 3 or 4 that are now on my bucket list after doing my research.
Oh.
I'm like,
and
oh,
one other
this
qualifier.
Is totally a place I want to go.
These are all open still.
Oh, yeah. Like we're not talking about ones that have closed down.
Those are epic, too. There's some epic, yeah, especially when you think about historic theaters. That's another one of our slots.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, these are all open. So I'm going to kick off right here in Nashville, Tennessee. You will hear a lot of Nashville because, as you know,
it's Music City. I mean,
there's a reason people come here to get discovered. It's because people come here and get discovered.
There's producers everywhere. And
they're sitting in on these writers' nights and small clubs. And so that really happens to people even today. So the Exit Inn. It's literally written out exit/in. The exit in opened here in Nashville in 1971. It is a
It came here when
We're the same. Our family's the same age as the Exit Inn. It is
in Nashville.
It is a capacity of 500, standing room only. There's a couple of seats up in the upstairs section.
Oh my gosh, but I forgot about that.
If you are looking for a seat, you're out of luck because this is a very small venue. Jimmy Buffett was the first show. How iconic is that? Steve Martin writes about the Exit Inn in his book Born Standing Up. Sting is wearing an Exit Inn t-shirt, which is black and white. Like, yes, it's iconic.
Very even. Nashville iconic.
He's wearing it in the Police's Zenyatta Mandata album artwork. So let me just, I mean, there's tens of thousands of performers that have played the Exit Inn. So I'm just going to rattle off a bunch. Now, again, 500 seats. Not even seats. 500 people.
500 people standing.
Shoulder to shoulder. Etta James, Roseanne Cash, Johnny Cash, Linda Ronstadt, Talking Heads, Billy Joel, Muddy Waters, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Willie Nelson, Kings of Leon, Lucinda Williams, the Allman Brothers Band, R.E.M. Do I have your attention, please?
Cage the Elephant. I mean, so fun.
So we had a little drama 2019-2020 with the building.
Yes.
There was drama of a buyout of the building. And then in April,
as with everything in Nashville, but that's a whole nother subject.
In April of 2021, the longtime operators of the Exit Inn, Chris and Talisha Cobb, they attempted to raise enough money to outbuy the development firm that was about to purchase the building. And they raised over $200,000, which is respectable, through their GoFundMe site. But the AJ Capital firm, which was the development firm, they closed on the property for $6.45 million.
Crazy.
So they were a little bit outbid there. Okay, now in AJ Capital Partners' defense, they are a local development firm that relocated here from Chicago in 2020. So they haven't been local very long. Local, using that lightly. They are saying that they have no plans to develop on it because they actually were the ones that went and deemed it a historic landmark.
Okay.
And so that does show, okay, maybe it is going to be safe.
Preserved.
Yeah. Yeah. And their founder said the company's intent was never to turn the Exit Inn into a hotel or into any other use. So maybe it's safe. If you're in Nashville, even if you're not planning to grab tickets to a show at the Exit Inn, it's still worth driving by just to even appreciate the little corner it sits on.
Yeah, even that little neighborhood's cool.
Yeah.
Elliston Place.
Yeah.
That's a very fun area. Okay. Another huge cultural iconic city in the South for music is New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a place called Tipitina's that I want to mention. Holds about 800 people. Have not visited this venue yet, but it's on my list now. So this venue, first of all, is it was a place. The name Tipitina comes from a song written by a very revered musician in New Orleans that they called Professor Longhair. He was a pianist. His true name is Henry Roland Byrd.
Okay.
But anyhow, he is very revered rhythm and blues musician in that whole New Orleans scene.
Cool.
And Tipitina was a song that he wrote. So this, one of many songs that he wrote. He also wrote a song apparently a lot of people know called Mardi Gras in New Orleans.
Okay.
Anyway, so, and that's played obviously in Carnival.
Sounds like that would be a hit down there for sure. Yes.
So this man, this particular club was kind of established in 1977 as a neighborhood juke joint, but also as a place for him to perform in his final years.
Wow.
So it's survived lots of different changes of ownerships and a brief closing in 1984, but it's been open most of the time since 77. Anyway, the list of artists that have played this venue is crazy. Many of the beloved artists of New Orleans have played it, meaning Dr. John, the Neville Brothers, Cowboy Mouth, Better Than Ezra, lots of those names.
Yeah.
But also national artists, Wilco, Nine Inch Nails, Pearl Jam, Lenny Kravitz, Bonnie Raitt, James Brown, Nine Inch Nails. Oh, I said that already.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, it goes on and on. Goo Goo Dolls, Willie Nelson. The list goes
on. If you've gotten to see any of those people at that venue, you are lucky.
I mean, yeah. It's so sweet when you come across a show that later the band is so epic and you're like, I saw them.
Especially if you had that feeling when you were there of like they're going places.
Yeah.
This stage is already too small for them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
That's so cool. Well, I'll mention the 40 Watt.
Oh, man. Okay.
Athens, Georgia. Now, you'll hear some college towns mentioned, and we were talking even before we hit record. College towns are a breeding ground for good music because you got a good music-loving fan base there.
That's right.
You got a talent pool of young people that might have a little bit more expendable time on their hands to practice, right? It just kind of is a nice environment for clubs. So, though it's been in 5 different locations since opening in 1979, the 40 Watt is definitely an iconic club. I would say...
And it's 500-ish?
Yes, okay. Thank you. I meant to mention that. 500 capacity. This is the home base for countless numbers of Athens bands, such as REM, the B-52s, Drive-By Truckers, and it's apparently got just incredible sound, easy access to, like, getting around the club, which is nice. Like, easy access to the bar, really friendly staff, you know, like, some couches.
What more fun place to work if you're a student at Georgia than the 40 Watt?
But I can't imagine if I saw any of these bands in a 500 capacity.
Oh my gosh, to see REM.
Nirvana, Snoop Dogg, Iggy Pop, Flaming Lips, Sonic Youth, Run DMC, The Black Crowes, My Morning Jacket, Dierks Bentley, The Killers, John Mayer. I mean, I just saw John
the
Mayer.
The Killers in a 500. I mean,
I just saw
so
John
epic.
Mayer at Bridgestone Arena here in Nashville and paid a penny for it. A pretty penny, I mean. Kenny Chesney, Sugarland. I mean, all different genres.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sure the Drive-By Truckers do an annual homecoming show.
Oh, that's
there.
Adorable.
That's like even maybe like a 3-night run or something.
Okay. That's adorable. So. Well, I love it. Well, I'll just stick with the college town.
Okay.
The Cat's Cradle.
That's a cute name.
It's about 750 capacity at that venue. And this is in Carrboro, North Carolina, which is just about a mile from the North Carolina Chapel Hill campus.
UNC Chapel Hill. Okay.
Okay. So it has been that area that they call the Triangle's premier live music event venue for quite some time.
Okay.
So this one, you know, also allows both some established bands and some up-and-coming acts to be seen on their stage. And it's some of the same ones we've already mentioned. Public Enemy, Nirvana, John Mayer, Joan Baez, Iggy Pop are some of the ones that have played that.
Okay,
venue.
What that is telling me is that those are the names of people that were willing to start somewhere small or that didn't have an overnight success. Like they had to do
their
grunt work.
They had to make the circles.
Yeah.
That's right. Hit those places for quite a while before they got
They didn't have a Adele type turnaround of like, okay,
yeah,
arena tour, stadiums, here we go. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's cool. Well, I know I mentioned I'm going to be in Nashville a bit, and I'm going to go ahead and talk about the one that if you know music venues that you're probably like, when is she going to talk about the Bluebird Cafe? So I'll go ahead and do that one.
Oh, yes.
So the Bluebird Cafe has...
Talk about tiny.
90 seats. It's the smallest one on my list. It opened in 1982. I always think I'm not at the right section of the street when I get to the Bluebird. It is not
so unassuming.
It's not in downtown Nashville. It's in like the suburb of Nashville. And it's considered a suburb.
Yeah.
that Green Hills area is where I'm talking about. It's so small. I literally bought my wedding dress next door. It's on a strip mall.
Yes.
So anyway, but this is what's crazy. So it opened in 1982. And at the time, the owner, she was, I think, dating a guitarist. So she wanted to started to incorporate music into her restaurant. It was a restaurant that started saying, okay, we'll do music. Well, then she felt like she had like this two-headed creature is her words. Because during the day, it was a ladies' lunch place.
How funny. I didn't know this.
I didn't either. But I mean, flowered tablecloths, tuna salad, like a ladies' lunch spot. And then mid-afternoon, they'd take the tablecloths off and bring sound systems in and have live music. People like Chet Atkins and Minnie Pearl would come for lunch. I'd never heard that before.
So cute.
Then it just sort of evolved into a live music spot. So lunch got dropped. It was just getting more and more popular in the evening for the reason of the music needs that were surfacing. And even beyond that, they were doing multiple genres of music, but the one that seemed to be really special was the night they did this Riders in the Round.
Yep.
Okay. And so if you know the name Ken Burns, incredible filmmaker, he's featured the Bluebird in his country music,
which was so excellent
film. The Bluebird even has its own documentary called Bluebird, An Accidental Landmark That Changed Music History. So if you're interested in learning more about the Bluebird, there's that film as well. It is marked as the place that Garth Brooks and Taylor Swift were discovered, putting that in quotes, sharing their songs. And the intimacy of this place cannot be overstated. Here's what's crazy too. Ticket prices. Because,
oh my goodness.
Because you don't know who's... Well, you do know who's coming, but you don't know who might guest appear. They're like $15.
Yeah, 10 to 15, I think. I think they 10 also to 15. Have a like $10. They want you to buy to food eat. Or alcohol.
Yeah, kind of like a comedy club that wants you to at least have some sort of a tab going. But you have to have reservations. And then even with your reservations, you're going to encounter line at
to
the
get
door
seated.
For general admission seating. But it is seats. It's tables, we've said. It's or, you know, you're going to have a server getting you food. But, I mean, it's not unlikely for someone of the level of Steven Tyler of Aerosmith to sit in.
Right. Just show up.
Like, hey,
and like,
I'm in town.
I'm going to do a song.
I'm doing some writing over a couple of streets over. Thought I'd sit in.
Pop in and do a couple songs.
That's insane.
That would be so fun.
So the Bluebird is certainly one that, even if you don't know the names, if you have... an evening in Nashville.
Yeah.
Get some tickets.
Yeah. And they do. I mean, you have to try out to play it. So it's not like you're going to be sitting there and it's some awkward, like,
oh gosh,
you
no.
know, 12-year-old that just got up there. Like, they're legit.
Professions. And Sunday nights are the big writer's night that and are the most coveted.
Yeah. The music is, it's written by you. It's not, they don't let you do cover songs. That's
yes,
what I'm like.
Exactly.
I'm not musical. I'm like, what's that called?
Right.
Original.
Original. Yeah.
Okay. So another one I wanted to mention is George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Oh, cool.
So this is the oldest and longest running live music venue in Arkansas.
Sweet.
It actually opened in the 30s as more of a like social event dance kind of place.
Okay.
And then live shows started in the 70s.
Nice.
So some of the artists who've played at George's Majestic Lounge are Leon Russell, the Little River Band, Delbert McClinton, Eddie Money, who I loved, Zach Brown Band, Sam Hunt.
Those are
awesome.
On
and on. But 700 people, so that'd be a fun one to on your trip to Arkansas.
That's so cool. Okay, over in Asheville, North Carolina, is the Orange Peel.
Oh, man. Okay.
I have had this one on my list just because it seems like artists that I follow, when I get the email of like the tour
this is
that
where
they're
they
on,
are.
This is where they're playing. A lot of times, if they're not playing in Nashville, this is like the closest to us or Atlanta, you know. Asheville, North Carolina's Orange Peel barely got on my list because it's 1,050.
But
I'm, yeah, it's
we're in. Including it.
They call themselves a social aid and pleasure club, and I'll talk more on that in a little bit. But it is, again, a premier spot for live music. They've hosted the Commodores.
Oh, my gosh.
And other
the Commodores.
Beloved acts of the 60s. Now, it became vacant for a time period. That's kind of been a thread in some of the ones we've talked about. Vacancy time periods or moving around. That's just part of being around for a long time. Rent goes up.
Yeah.
Neighborhoods change. So a lot of these venues, it's unique, especially if they're in the original.
Oh, that's super rare.
Space that they started. But they are sort of attributed to bringing in artists like the Smashing Pumpkins, Arcade Fire, Bob Dylan. Again, 1,050 capacity. They are known for recognizing, you know, legendary performers before they're legendary performers. Everyone from Bob Dylan to Ziggy Marley to Wilco. They've performed all to sold-out audiences. So in New Orleans, the term social aid and pleasure club describes organizations that provide comfort or care or just entertainment to its membership. So the Orange Peel's mission is to do all of that and more for the whole area of Western North Carolina. They host a number of benefits there. They do galas and weddings and birthday parties and even memorial services. So that's why they're holding on to that social aid and pleasure club title. But I thought that was, that sounds so vintage to me.
Yeah, well, I think that was, that's one of the hot spots for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Austin, Texas.
Woohoo.
Also college town.
Huge
in a sense.
Music.
You know, like that's, I know it's big, it's a big, bigger city, but there's a place called the Continental Club.
That just sounds epic.
And I want to go here. This is now on my list as
just
well.
What
so
you
it's
need.
Just 200 people, which that's pretty stinking small.
Yeah, it is.
It started as a swanky supper club.
Okay.
And then it later became like a working man's blue collar bar. I'm just reading. This
I
is
love
from their
that.
Website.
I love that.
Where it opened at 7 a.m. and eventually grew to be one of the premier live music venues, presenting bands like Stevie Ray Vaughan and the Double Troubles from there, Paul Ray and the Cobras, and many more back in the late 70s and through the early 80s. And then from like 83 to 87, it became a hotbed for new wave, punk, and rock and roll bands like Social Distortion.
Oh my gosh.
And one of my favorites in the 80s, The Replacements.
Oh wow.
So anyhow, this place is still hopping. They've had Robert Plant has played this stage. I just think like
half
I can't
of
imagine
Led Zeppelin. That's
seeing
crazy.
Him on a stage of 200.
No.
But there's so much good music in Austin. That could be its own episode sometime, talking about Austin City Limits and just all the goodness that comes out of that whole town. But the Continental Club, add that to
I
your...
love it. Austin and Nashville so much get compared to one another.
They do.
So I'm glad
they
you
do.
Had an Austin venue to mention. All right, shifting back to New Orleans briefly, I would love to mention Preservation Hall in New Orleans, capacity 100.
That place sounds amazing.
It does. So founded in 1961, this is one of New Orleans' oldest venues. The story of Preservation Hall, though, dates back to the 50s, and I absolutely love this. It started as a way to preserve the legacy of jazz. So a lot of the stuff that we're talking about now, when they were founded, probably weren't thinking, this is going to be talked about one day, right?
Right.
Well, Preservation Hall kind of started as a place to make sure, not necessarily that
Hence
Preservation Hall was exactly was mentioned, but they wanted to preserve the music of jazz because it was a little bit getting overshadowed by the teenage Elvis craze happening and the Beatles, and there was just a lot of overshadowing of jazz. And so there was a very small art gallery on St. Peter Street, in New Orleans, which is in the French Quarter. And upon opening the gallery, the proprietor, Larry Bornstein, he founded it and this gallery, and that basically started taking all his time And then he realized, I'm not going to have time to go into jazz concerts anymore. I've got this gallery I'm running and I love jazz. And so he started to invite the musicians to have rehearsals over in his gallery so he could at least be hearing jazz. So then he eventually moved his gallery to a nearby building because the jam sessions are growing, right? So it's almost like they're so good that they're just jamming, and this is as good as they're going to be on stage, right? Later that evening or the following day. So he moves his gallery, and about that time, a young couple on an extended honeymoon comes through town, and the Jaffees, and they began to work with him, and ownership of the Preservation Hall began, which was very unique in that it was a racially integrated place.
Yes.
Okay. The bands were integrated. The patrons were integrated.
At a time when that was very unusual.
No, this is like Jim Crow era of the South. But that's what they were most familiar with. They're from Pennsylvania, Sandra and Alan Jaffee. And so in 1963, Alan Jaffee, he organized the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. Okay.
Love it.
So they're so good. Like, just let's just make a band out of all these sort of session players that we've got around here. And they had a string of performances in the Midwest. And he is on record as saying, like, they're going to be a hit. And true to his estimation, the tour was a success. Interest in the band began to bubble, not just around New Orleans, but as all the way into other countries. And following the decades of the band traveling, they're still with us today. They have played with the Grateful Dead. They've played for the King of Thailand.
All kinds of open
doors. Lots of opportunities for this band. Now, Alan Jaffee had an untimely passing in 1987, but the Preservation Hall and the Preservation Jazz Band, like I said, they are continuing on. They now operate under Jaffee's second son, Benjamin. So you can still go hear great music.
Good old New Orleans jazz.
The band plays every Tuesday night. There's music every night of the week.
But this
jazz hall band, the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, they play every Tuesday night. But I will say, they are going on tour with Josh Groban this summer.
Fun.
So they're opening for him. So they're probably going to be gone a lot of the summer dates. So if you're really banking on seeing them, make sure to check their tour dates with Josh Groban, because
if you had the Josh Groban tickets, don't miss the opener.
Absolutely. He's coming here. So I kind of wanted to see it for that sake. But they have so many great photos, black and white old photos that are on their website. I would highly encourage people to go check it out, because I had so much fun looking at old photos. I loved the way the people were dressed.
I know.
The musicians.
I know. Back when it was,
it was just, everything looks so classy, but they also look very hot. And, you know, I mean,
it's New Orleans,
you know,
for goodness sake.
The humidity is getting to them. But yeah, I mean, what an incredible place.
Well, when we were doing the research for this podcast, that was also on my list. And I was putting in my notes, you know, what I wanted to say for each place. And when I came to Preservation Hall, I put, just look at website. Because there was so much I didn't even know what to include.
Yeah, the history is pretty lengthy. So I hope I did an okay job summarizing that for you guys. But yeah,
you did a great job.
Iconic for sure.
On a number of levels. Okay, I'm going tiny next.
Okay, well, that's pretty tiny. It was 100. You're going smaller than 100.
I'm going half of that.
Oh my gosh, okay.
This place we've actually seen.
Okay, yeah.
Red's Lounge in Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Oh my gosh. If we weren't doing a slow roll through town, we would have missed it. We actually did miss it. Let's be honest.
When I said in the intro that some of these are cinder block mm-hmm. places with no windows, this is what I was talking about.
Yeah.
This place is, I mean, there's no website. If you're going to Clarksdale, you'll just have to ask around. No, you can look it up. I think TripAdvisor or something. You can find things about it, but there's no website.
No.
This place was, it's owned and was started by a man named Red, obviously, Red Payden. He is often behind the bar or tending the smoker, which is outside on the porch. Do you remember that?
I'm so glad you mentioned that because I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was about to say, imagine a huge smoker. That covered pretty much the entire porch. Front facade.
There's no windows. There's nothing lovely about this place, but it is iconic blues.
Yes.
In the middle of
the home Delta. Of the blues. Yeah.
So Kingfish, who we've talked about on our blues episode before, has played here. Lots of blues names, many of which I don't know. I know some blues names, but
right.
these, you know, Watermelon Slim, Luscious Spiller, Mark Muleman Massey, Robert Bilbo Walker, have all played this venue. So if you're into the blues, this might be a pilgrimage for you.
There's not a lot of places that are 50 seats that have live music happening,
with
right?
With the owner at the smoker out front or behind the bar.
Yeah, that alone should draw you in.
And it's like, there's like red Christmas lights because it's red. So there's like red Christmas lights all hanging on the walls. But it's just very, very casual.
Yeah. And we got to go by it.
But we had Larbus Son Jacob with us.
And it's more of a nightclub.
And it is a nightclub. And, you know, it's in an area where just being a couple girls, I don't know that we would want to go alone.
Yeah, safety first.
But certainly not with a four-year-old. So
it is.
But it would be so fun to hear music there.
It's just, yeah. It's just one of those lovely places that I hope stays intact because you just know if the walls could talk, right?
There was one that used to be there in that area that's not open anymore called Po Monkeys. I don't think it's open anymore.
Okay.
But Reds is still around.
Well, the last one on my list is the Station Inn.
Oh, another Nashville icon.
Here in Nashville, capacity is about 150. So in 1974, the Station Inn was opened by a group of six bluegrass pickers and singers. It has been in two locations, so it's at its second location where it stands today.
But it's been at this one for a long time.
So it's been owned by J.T. Gray since 1981. He actually died last year at age 75. The Station Inn mourned that. So he was deeply mourned in our city. The Station Inn lives on, though. J.T. Gray was a musician raised in Corinth, Mississippi, which is just over the Tennessee border here.
Which we've talked about when we talked about slug burgers.
Yes, that's absolutely. Corinth, Mississippi keeps coming up. He moved here in the 70s, and he transformed the club to kind of a coffee house sort of vibe. It was near Nashville's Vanderbilt University, so that definitely works to have a coffee house kind of vibe near a college campus. But the owners themselves, they were the house band, okay? Mm-hmm. Built-in entertainment. That's perfect. They changed hands a couple of times, and it has been in our 12th Avenue South. We call it the Gulch area.
Before it was the Gulch. Yeah. It was there long before it was called the Gulch.
For sure. It moved there in 1978. So many of the world's, successful musicians have played the Station Inn, including Bill Monroe, Alan Jackson, Dierks Bentley, Vince Gill, Alison Krauss, John Prine. The venue's been around for so long and so many generations that there are people that, it's a generational kind of trip to bring your loved ones through. There is sort of a same vibe as the Bluebird, like never know who might sit in on a session or just hop up on stage. Some of the people that were known to have taken the stage before they were big names include Chris Stapleton, the Old Crow Medicine Show. They were like a house band there for a very long time.
Cute.
Dierks Bentley, all of them had a household name there for a long run in a venue of 150 people.
So I've been here a few times, and even sometimes you're just, one time you and I were there together, and I can't remember who the woman that was playing. She was just a player behind the band, but she was really good. And then it came out later that she played with several different well-known artists.
Yeah. And that happens. These are like session players or background singers or the band
that rub shoulders with all the Nashville big names.
Yeah.
So that's really fun to me too.
Jenny Lynn was her name.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to look her up too. She's, I mean, all of the people that you see there, you're like, they could have their own live recording happening right now.
Yeah.
And it would be a hit.
And they might actually have that.
True.
Like,
that's true.
Another thing that's funny is, you know, she could be like, oh yeah, and I have 5 CDs if you're interested.
That's true. I'm like, who are you? Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Well, the last one I had on my list was the Charleston Music Hall. Charleston, South Carolina is 965, so knock it on 1,000 people. But it's steeped in history. Now, it didn't start as a music hall. It started, it's one of the oldest buildings on the block that it's on. It was a tower depot. It was built as a passenger station of the South Carolina Railroad. And then later, it was a passenger depot, and then it closed down. It's so wild to think about, like, that was all pre-Civil War.
Oh, my gosh. Then, whoa.
Following the Civil War, it became the Charleston Bagging Manufacturing Company, where they made woven fiber bags.
Okay.
So it didn't become a music venue until later.
Okay.
In 1995, the Bennett Hofford Company facilitated the hall's amazing transformation into this arts venue.
Oh, I bet it's glorious.
And, but I just wanted to mention it because it's even been, David Byrne has played here, Joan Baez has played here, but one of our Nashville favorites, the renowned bluegrass musician Ricky Skaggs.
Yeah.
He won a Grammy for a live album that was recorded at this venue.
Oh, cool.
In 2003. So,
wow.
If you're a Ricky Skaggs fan, you may have already heard music from the Charleston Music Hall, whether you knew that's where it was or not.
Well, that's cool because he is, being a bluegrass picker, he had his pick of lots of other venues even some could. We've discussed already, so that's very interesting.
He must really like something about something the look or the sound of the Charleston Music Hall. So
super cool.
Maybe on your next Charleston trip you can take a peek and see who's going to be there.
We love Charleston. We had some honorable mentions that we could not say.
You just gotta say them, even if they just get name and a little nod. The Burl in Lexington, Kentucky. So it was originally built in 1926. I don't guess I need to go into all of the details of that, but it holds about 300. Another honorable mention is the Bradfordville Blues Club in Tallahassee. It's one of these cinder block juke joints, but has had some very well-known blues artists.
Cool.
So there's another honorable mention. The Zanzibar Theater in Louisville holds about 350. That's one we didn't want to not mention. Another college town of Oxford, Mississippi has Proud Larry's. About 300 people.
Now that sounds like a spring break spot to me. Proud Larry's, right?
Well, it's had Jason Isbell, Kingfish, Muddy Magnolias.
Okay.
Some of those fun names. So that's just a few honorable mentions that we wanted to honor time, but give them a nod.
So y'all, what did we miss? There's somebody out there going,
what? You didn't include?
So-and-so did their live recording. Yeah. Let us know. Message us through Instagram at Steel Magnolias Podcast or jump on our website, steelmagnoliaspodcast.com. Let us know what we missed.
But we do know that we still have some outdoor venues. We still have some bigger capacity venues. We still have former dance halls. I mean, there's lots we can go into.
It had to be open today under 1,000 or 1,000 capacity or under. And we put a qualifier that somebody significant had to kind
have
of
played.
Come through there.
Yeah.
Maybe even better if they were like a nobody when they played there, you know.
That's so fun. Well.
So that was such a good, fun episode. I'm so charged up to talk about the other sort of categories that we put together, but you'll have to wait on that. So until next time, we hope you guys have a great week. And with that, peace be with you.
And also with y'all.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.